So, welcome again. So I think I'll try to speak relatively briefly, and then we can spend more of our time talking to each other. As I said, I think that can be more interesting sometimes. And then I get to know you, which is more interesting to me. And just, I can talk to myself anytime. It's a symbiotic thing. You know. So maybe I'll just start by saying a few things about practice and practicing. A few reflections, maybe they'll be helpful. How many of you have what you would call, your own criteria is the only important thing here, busy lives? I'm just curious, maybe Seattle, that doesn't happen, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe Seattle is like, you know, everybody's kayaking and stuff. These are our stereotypes about Seattle. Busy, yeah, I've got a very busy kayaking schedule. Maybe you're a professional. One of the things about kind of modern lifestyle, at least in many parts of the United States, is people are doing a lot. They're kind of busy. Even when there's maybe not a lot of, we're just good at keeping ourselves busy, even when it's not a lot of important things to do. And I think it's a fairly universal. Some people, you know, you have responsibilities as well. It's not just, it's not necessarily unimportant things you're busy with. And it's not hard to feel sort of spread thin between a number of different areas of life that you're attending to simultaneously. And that can lead to an experiential sense of being spread thin, meaning kind of you, your person, being kind of spread out there among a variety of sort of just generally out there. That feels a certain way. And that happens just through activity, but also in terms of the mind, often we're spread thin in terms of where we're residing just mentally. We are living large parts of our life in the future. You know the future? That thing stretching way out ahead of you? That thing that sometimes, you know, looks so bright and inspiring and wonderful, and you think, yes, this is what it's about. And that thing which at other times is like, I always knew it would come to this. Your worst fears realized, and stretching out about 20 or 30 years into the future. That's spread thin. And we tend to live a lot of our lives just in that dimension, spread between past and future. Yeah. Living a lot of our time in what's going to come next, what we think is going to come next, what we want to come next, what we hope will come next, what we hope will not come next. There's a lot going on in there, out there, wherever that is. Except that it's nowhere. Right? That future is in your mind all the time. That's the only place it exists. And that's amazing. It's amazing because of how real it feels. It's amazing because of how much stress and anxiety and suffering it can cause. and by how unconnected we can feel to life. That's a, kind of also a phenomena in our present day, people feeling disconnected or not fully alive. And often that is the case because we're not actually living where we are. There's a separation, there's a disconnect between where we're residing mentally and where we actually are. So we're kind of not residing anywhere. We're sort of experience ourselves existing in a kind of a gap. And life has a certain quality when we're living in that kind of gap. And when we're living in a virtual reality, meaning a mind-created reality, it also has a certain lack of kind of aliveness because it's not. I'm living in kind of dream worlds. So one of the things we're doing in what we call meditation, which isn't just formal sitting, but it's what we're kind of cultivating here in everything we do, is actually learning how to be present here for like a split second. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah. See, we all have times when we are very, very present that happen kind of randomly or due to certain sets of conditions coming together, and then we all of a sudden, you know, without meditating or even hearing the word meditation, where we feel ourselves to be radically present, and those are quite amazing moments. They tend to be moments we feel really connected, yeah, really alive. Things feel meaningful. There's a sense of kind of almost like of possibility just in, it's almost like pregnant in the moment. Just we end up feeling sort of creative and playful when we're really present in this way. And it happens, you know, randomly. You're with someone who you think is terrific and you get really present, or you're on vacation and it's a beautiful moment and you're feeling really relaxed and nobody's bugging you, and all of a sudden, hey, I'm here. You know? And so we have these moments where sometimes it happens randomly. You're walking down the street and all of a sudden, wow, I'm really here. Yeah? And life, all of a sudden, there's texture and experience. It's very vivid. Life gets very vivid in those moments. And then we try to figure out, like, how did that happen? You know, well, I went to Hawaii. I should figure out how to get back there. You know, and then we spend our life planning those kinds of moments. You know, or actually, I was jumping off a tall building, and so I better do a lot more jumping off buildings because I get really present when I'm falling. You know, 1,000 miles an hour. And so there are ways to get ourselves present. But one of the things we practice in this meditation stuff is we actually just practice this kind of presence in an ordinary way. Like I said, even for a second, what is it to just inhabit your body for a moment? And then you get pulled off in your mind, come back for another moment. I did that little light scan through the body in the beginning of the sitting. Actually, I kind of skipped the legs because I was in a rush. Kind of skipped around. It was a speed body meditation. I was too ambitious. I wanted to do so many different things with you all. But just these simple meditative practices of putting your mind in your body, your attention landing in your body, and learning how to kind of be there. Yeah? Feeling your feet and your ankles and your lower legs. And as our attention kind of gets more familiar with being here, it starts to feel like home. At first it may feel like, what? I can't be there for my ankle for a second. First of all, it just feels like a block of wood. But this is part of why it's a practice. We're kind of learning and getting familiar with inhabiting. You know, awareness starts to kind of land more. So just those simple practices of moving through your body with your attention and inhabiting, feeling and inhabiting each part of your body is sort of like you're building a home for yourself. You're kind of decreasing the distance between you and you. And then you're sort of closer. Even when you go off, it's not as far to get back. You know, it's not like a 20-mile journey through. You know, it's like, oh yeah, here I am. Okay, we're back. So just those practices, they're humble. You know, they're very simple, and they're very, very powerful. You just did that every day, or a few times a day, I think you'd start to feel something. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just this very simple, just being more where you are, more present. So these moments of, or in the sitting meditation, when the mind wanders off, we notice where it goes. That's an important part, noticing where it goes. As you're watching the worlds you inhabit, your mind worlds, and there are many of them, virtual realities, yeah. Noticing where it goes, and then coming back in the beginning, coming back just to breathing in, breathing out. Every time you come back, you're practicing something. Most people get bummed out. Oh, my mind's wandering a lot. I have to come back. I must suck at this. You know, but it's actually the coming back is the practicing part. How you come back matters. Can you come back gently? Can you come back? And so this coming back, then all of a sudden we're here for a moment. This develops a momentum of presentness. It just does. We start to live from here more. You know, instead of 98% in virtual realities of the mind, we start to be, you know, whatever, 30% here. Yeah? And this is still going. It ain't gonna stop. Yeah? But we sort of have a base more. As this base starts to deepen, as the awareness gets steadier, the present moment awareness. See, first it's very hard to see anything because we're here so little. Imagine if you're doing a science experiment, but you could only pay attention to watching the thing unfold, like every 15 minutes. You could come back and glance at it, and then you had to leave. You couldn't, how would you study anything? Because you can't see continuity. You have to kind of be present for it, see? So much of our life is like that. We kind of can't even see much because we're not here long enough to even see what's happening in the mind. But as we practice this inhabiting, living in the body, as we practice this coming back, we start to develop a momentum of presentness, kind of a, we start to reside here for a little bit. As this gets steadier, then this starts to get clearer, in the sense we start to see our mind much more clearly. When you're not present for long, you can't see your mind. It's like a tornado. You're just caught up in it. You know, how do you see anything from inside a tornado? It's hard to. As you find some stability, then you can actually start to watch this thing. Whoa, it's doing a lot. It's actually shaping your reality from moment to moment, your thinking is. And that's something we can watch, we can learn to observe, and that's fascinating. Then we don't have this experience of future and the past stretching out like that, because we see the future and the past are happening right here. They're happening right here all the time. We're actually not going anywhere. This really undermines this kind of striving that people can get into in meditating, to attain something, to get somewhere, to become something meditatively, some really advanced kind of person, you know, advanced spiritual person, or you know, that movement towards the future, which can happen in any area, can even happen here in meditating. That really starts to undermine it, because you see, well, where am I moving? I'm just always here. Hmm? So again, as the awareness gets steady, we can also start to see, whoa, there's also lots of reasons why I'm not present. It's not just that I'm distracted or caught up. It's also that there's a lot of stuff happening in here that I have no idea how to be with. Painful stuff sometimes. Feelings, emotions, sensations that are hard to be with. I mean, just think about it. Why don't you just say, hey, I'm going to just hang out with myself today and not do anything. I'm not going to turn on any gadget or look at the computer, or I'm not going to get out a book. I'm just going to be with myself. Is that an enjoyable experience for most of you? No, we have no idea how to be with ourselves. It's like foreign territory and not like an exciting exotic trip often. It's more like, whoa. So it's a powerful thing about the practice is that we're actually deciding, whoa, I'm going to cultivate this steady presentness, and I'm actually going to learn how to be with all of this stuff that arises. I'm going to practice that. I'm going to attend to the sensations in my own body. I'm going to be with unpleasant pain in my knee, and I'm going to watch it unfold. I'm going to watch what my mind does with pain, how my mind creates scenarios of my own, you know, impending amputation, because Will has not rung the bell yet. So, learning how to be with our own emotions, our own sadness, our own fear. What'd you do this weekend? I hung out with my fear. It was great. It's a very useful thing to do. You don't have to spend the whole weekend there. But who thinks that's useful? Well, fear can run our whole life. Yeah? And we never look at it. We're always looking at the things we're afraid of, trying to fix them and avoid them and work them out. We never think to turn to fear itself and attend to it. Whoa. What is fear? It's a state. A state that arises due to various conditions. At first, it may feel too overwhelming to be with. I can't do that. But as we develop some steadiness just in our body and with our breathing, we actually develop a kind of confidence. Well, you know, I can be with this. And we start to, when you hang out with fear for a while, you start to say, fear is not that scary. It's a state. It has certain qualities, and you can be with unbelievable levels of fear. It's when that fear is projected out into the world that it's very hard, much harder to deal with. So that's something we practice here. When we feel afraid, we turn to it. Oh. Similarly with anger or sadness, loneliness. You know, these are things that generate tremendous amounts of activity in us to avoid. Energy. And we run from them, a feeling of emptiness. And I don't mean the like Buddhist kind you read about. I mean that empty feeling. Yeah. We don't know how to be with that. So this is part of why we don't reside here. There's a lot of uncomfortable stuff happens here. Well, your body gets sick and there's, you know, it breaks down. Who wants to be there? But as we develop our practice, this is the material of our practice. We turn towards that stuff so that we don't have to be running away from it our whole lives. When you can be with discomfort in your own body, it's a tremendous place of freedom. Because it's the discomfort in your own body that makes it unavoidable that you yell at the person you love. You couldn't tolerate the feeling that arose in you. So, that's happening all the time. And so, anyway, so what we're positing here is that it's useful that with this meditative awareness we can actually turn towards everything that's arising in the body and mind and learn how to be with it in a harmonious way. Because the meditative shift is the shift in how we're relating to experience. It's not the shift in getting more of these experiences or less of these experiences. That's not the shift. Even though people tend to think that, oh, once I meditate for a while, I'll have all the happy feelings and I just won't have the unhappy ones. I'll be blissed out. Yeah. That's not the direction. What really develops in meditative practice is the awareness, the capacity for awareness with experience. Our capacity to be with experience without struggle, without fight, without tension. And then you don't have to get away from anything. I say have to get away from anything. It doesn't mean you shouldn't get away from certain things. This is a place of confusion sometimes for people. We can go into it in the question period, but this doesn't mean you don't act in your life. Somebody's hurting you and you just say, oh, I'm just going to be with it the way it is. That's not what we're talking about. But this kind of confidence, capacity to be with experience, so we don't have to be running or avoiding. And then once it gets steadier, even, we can then start watching our own mind in a much more refined way, watching how you scare yourself with your thinking. Thoughts are discrete mental events that arise here. I mean, here. Yeah, boop, bloop, bloop. And yet, when we don't see them clearly, they just become reality. It's like they magically alter the world. It's amazing. Think about it. You're thinking a certain way about, and then the world conforms to that. It's happening all the time. So in developing this capacity for awareness, we actually develop the capacity to watch our own mind and not be bound by it. And it's our thinking that determines, and our belief, our kind of habitual, automatic believing what we think, which even shapes our whole sense of self. Who we think we are. You know, that limited, imperfect, incomplete or broken person that often people believe themselves to be, inadequate, unworthy, when you go deep enough into some of the underlying beliefs that people hold. That. Doesn't that shape your experience when you're believing those beliefs that we hold? It does. That amazing power of the mind, the thinking mind, and we can turn our attention to it. That's a good start, right? So I say these things for a few reasons. One, to kind of encourage you in this practice. It's very, very powerful. It's very simple. It's sort of deceptively simple, but also very, very powerful. It's something that, even though we're always here, so in a way we never go anywhere, it also develops. This is this interesting paradox. It develops by us being here. It's a weird thing around directionality. Always we think, in order to progress, we need to go to the next thing. And this is kind of a counterintuitive, paradoxical kind of progression. We progress in this by being here for a moment with what's happening. It's like we deepen into the present. It's a different kind of... And we expand gradually, our capacity to be with experience expands. As the mind gets steadier and we develop more facility with being able to be with the moment-to-moment changing nature of our own experience, body and mind and environment, as that steadiness, as we get less sticky around the material, we start to see the characteristics of everything that's happening in our mind and body, how everything's changing all the time, how we also start to see how we build a sense of identity around our momentary experience from moment to moment. We're doing that all the time. We feel sad and we build a sense of self out of it. We feel worthless in a moment and we build a whole sense of who I am out of that feeling, in the momentary feeling. You feel angry, and when you're not really aware with it, you become the angry person. It's like, that's who you are. So we can start to watch that too, how all these conditions that are constantly changing, what we feel, what we think, what emotions are present, we're really not deciding what arises in that realm, but how we build a sense of identity around it. It's a fascinating thing to watch. As we see this process, it starts to unwind itself. It's harder to build a sense of self out of something you see coming and going. It's harder to take personally fear or loneliness or even anger. As you see it as a phenomena, it's not you. It's a phenomena that arises in your awareness, in your experience, due to conditions, and then it goes away. And it's really only our resisting it and our trying to get rid of it and our identifying with it which really locks it in and makes it feel like a real problem. Is there anything else I want to say? And then as the mind gets steadier with experience, sort of less jittery, you know, less scared, less kind of, need to tinker with this one. Then it starts to get quiet. We start to experience a kind of peace, ease, with in the midst of life as it is. With all of its ups and downs, its changing conditions, its joys and sorrows, success and failure, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. This isn't like, you know, it's not like, steady all the time, but that's the direction. Peace, more peace, steadiness, ease within life as it is, with life as it is. That's why, at least in my view, this stuff is so useful. Because it's not about absenting yourself from the world as it is or making everything perfect, including you. Once I make myself perfect, once I get to be that person I always wanted to be, then I'll experience peace all the time. That's not true. First of all, you'll never get there in a lasting way. And second of all, that's not the way we arrive at peace. And you know that because you've achieved your goals various times, and what happens? How much peace do you get? Some. But this is a different kind. This is the peace that comes from being able to be with things as they are, from not being dependent on conditions for your happiness. And this is something that we kind of grow with and cultivate together. Even a little more steadiness in the midst of life's ups and downs is felt as a huge, huge change. Because this is the kind of thing, you know, in our society that is just not cultivated. That's not even on the radar. You know, our radar is achievement. Our radar is becoming. Our radar is when I get there. And that's a different And that's fine too. It's fine to get there. But it's sort of, what do you, that's not the way to arrive at a kind of steady peace. Maybe I'll close this part of talking just with a poem from Ryokan, that wonderful Japanese Zen master, wanderer, poet. You know, he says, and this speaks to this kind of directionality, you know, where we think we need to cultivate as opposed to where we need to cultivate, which is just here, yeah? This essence of our practice, which is being here, right here with things the way they are right now. So the poem is, the Buddha is your mind and the way goes nowhere. If you point your cart north when you want to go south, how will you arrive? Get it? Actually, I'll share one other little. I heard this guy talk. He was a Zen monk many years ago, and he had been an engineer. And he had this cool way of talking. I never saw him again. I don't know what happened to him, but he had this kind of cool way of talking about the Dharma. It was very engineer-y. It was like really his own thing. And he said something which stuck with me. He said, you know, in our life, we're always trying to make progress and develop on the X and Y axis. He said, but meditation is the Z axis. It's the one that comes out of the page. I just thought that was a nice visual, you know? The axis of the present moment. So, okay. So let's take a few, you know, we have some time now, and for the fun part, which is, you know, I'd love to hear from you a little bit about kind of what your questions are, what you're exploring in your own practice, what you're experiencing, what you're interested in, kind of where the edge is for you, and then we can dialogue about it. You know, we have a mic to go around, and there are no stupid questions when it comes to this stuff, really. I know people say that a lot, but here it's really true. Mm-hmm. I'll get you after it. Maybe you can use the mic just so everybody can hear you, yeah.
You said that we're going for sort of a steady peace, or that's some type of goal, and then you also said that that when you live in your imagination, it doesn't quite feel alive or real. And I think initially the idea of being peaceful all the time doesn't seem that great. In some ways, it'd be nice to have just feel really alive or really
yeah.
Deep. And I think reconciling those, I don't know, for some reason it's kind of difficult for me to want to get fully alive and then.
Yeah. No, I think we're just talking about the same thing in different ways. When I'm talking about peace, first of all, I wasn't talking about it as a goal. I wasn't talking about like peace, you know, like just the same. Everything's the same. What I meant was sort of more like, but I think it's really good that you're bringing that up, because it's like you're exposing some of these underlying associations that we have with some of what the teachings talk about. You know, I think, and that's not just you, I think it's fairly universal. The kind of peace I'm talking about is the kind of peace of being able to be with whatever's happening and be okay with it. Yeah? I don't mean you like it, but it's like, oh, that's what I mean by peace. And so if you're feeling joy, it's not like the peace negates the joy. You know, it's more like you can really feel joy. I mean, that's something that for us in this country often, we're not that good at. You know, we defend against joy because we're kind of afraid of it. We don't even know how to be with the positive. I don't even like those terms, but we don't even know how to be with joy. I mean, how many of us really let that in when it's there? Be honest. You know, we're afraid that we might, you know. Great. Awesome. You can teach us. That's beautiful. So, but sometimes, you know, I mean, it depends on the context too. You can, you know, sometimes we're afraid of like, oh, what will I do if I really feel this good? Maybe I'll do something ridiculous and then everybody will laugh at me. Unconsciously, we can think these things. So that's part of the direction as we practice, is to actually feel all of it. Yeah? So it's not that it becomes some flat-lined kind of peace. It's that we're at peace with whether we're feeling, I don't mean at peace as some kind of final thing, but like, it's okay to feel real joy and to really feel it. It's okay to feel real grief and really feel it. Does that make sense? So the peace is not a state. It's the kind of, it's very subtle and hard to talk about. It's the sense of deep, deep, deep okayness with what's happening. Whether it looks like this or like this. You know? Yeah. That's a great point, a great question you brought up, because I think it can be confusing. Yeah, in the front here.
Yeah. So, what you said about not being able to spend time with ourselves really struck me, and I think one of the reasons that in my life that's so prevalent is that it's worked, you know, up till now. You know, I'm here now, and that's how I got here. And the strategies around surviving that I have, they work. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to hear what you think about the transition away from, you know, the knowledge and the trust that we know of what works, but which leads to suffering, to this thing that we don't necessarily trust yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to phrase it. Mm-hmm. This thing that we don't trust yet, which is...
Being with ourselves and being with what.
Yeah, I think that's very well articulated. It's true. We trust our habitual ways of doing things because they got us this far. Even if there's like a lot of evidence that they're really limiting, and that's just an interesting thing about the human psyche. You know, is yeah, those things are useful. You survived. Congratulations, all of you. You made it. You're here. This is the culmination of everything that's happened before now in your whole life. Sorry. Listening to me. No, but yeah, okay. I mean, that's a good point. That's true. And we're really used to relying on the things that we... So we're really used to relying on those things. And a lot of times we don't actually see really clearly how they're limiting. That's part of what insight is. It's seeing how the things we're doing are not working. Yeah. Seeing how they cause suffering in the moment. And so that's a big part of the path is to take a look at your life, you know, and to really take a look at how you're actually living. How is this, with that kind of curiosity, that's a kind of Dharma inquiry, you know, it's like, how is this working out? This things I'm doing or this I'm doing. And then you start to see where it works, where it kind of works, and where, this looks like it works, and actually it worked when I was 10, but now it's not working at all, you know? And I think that often part of the reason we don't want to relinquish these defenses, you know, sometimes it's just armoring. It's just, you know what, this is how I stay feeling safe, and I ain't coming out because I'm not sure it's safe out there. And actually I have a lot of evidence that it's not. So I think one of the ways that those things can relax is that we slowly start to trust this other thing. And that happens slowly. You're right, we may not trust it yet. The balance may be like, I mostly trust my ways, and I kind of, this thing seems like promising. Yeah. So this dual, I would say there's two parts of it. One is seeing what is kind of cause and effect in your own experience. What's not working? that opens up some space for something new to happen. The other thing is, as this awareness, present moment, presentness, awareness starts to get stronger and develop, we naturally trust it more because it's reliable. Huh. When I'm really present, I can actually see more clearly than I can when I'm in my, like, armored up mode. Then I can't see anything. Everything looks like, you know, Attila the Hun coming at me. But when I'm really present, oh, I can actually see more clearly what's a threat and what's not. I can recognize when something's actually a threat and not, and I can respond to it. And that happens gradually. Oh, when I'm present, I can actually be with this feeling of feeling embarrassed, and it can be okay. Oh, maybe then I don't have to protect myself so much from feeling embarrassed, which I do by not interacting with human beings. I mean, we have all kinds of ways of not feeling certain things, limiting ourselves in what we do so that we don't feel certain things. And so I think it's that two things of seeing and then letting this thing grow and letting ourselves slowly rely on it more out of experience. Does that kind of meet what you're talking about? Yeah. But don't rush it. And don't rush, and this is the thing, sometimes we see the things that are limiting us and we're like, okay, that's not working, let's get rid of it. Even if we've heard the meditation instruction hundreds of times. So that's not that useful. You know, no, acknowledge it, make space for it. Okay, yeah, this is what I'm doing here. I'm really don't want to feel embarrassed, or I really don't want to feel rejected. You know, I really don't want to be rejected, so I'm not living in all these areas. Okay. Don't push it too hard, yeah? But slowly work with it. You know, because when you try to get rid of things, they just come back stronger. Psyche hates that. You know, and states of mind don't respond well. Emotions don't respond well to being pushed away. They get stronger. And it's a paradoxical kind of thing. Yeah, thanks for that. That's a great, great question. Yeah, how about in the back and then over here? Or maybe we'll go here and then the back just for...
Yeah. I think I've had a tendency before to kind of turn away from fear or anger or things I would think would be a negative emotion. And I'm kind of...
Just to say, anybody else have that experience? Okay, you're in good company. Yeah.
Well, I feel like since I started meditating, I've tried to be more with, at least aware of it.
Yeah.
And I find myself a lot of times really getting sucked up into it and to a point where it's not just observing and really having it define me or really feel like it's my reality at the moment. So just kind of wondering, like, what's a strategy or balance for that?
So you're kind of like saying, oh, I'm going to be with this, and then you get sucked up into it. What does that look like?
I think real irritable and maybe hard for other people around me to be around.
I mean, this stuff we can do gradually. It's not like, be with it for a little bit. You know? Say, oh, I'm going to be with fear. Okay, I'm feeling fear. I'm going to be with this for like 3 minutes. That might be too long. So you're kind of warming up. And then, oh, it's getting really overwhelming. Go do something else. You know, distract yourself. It's like, so it's not like an all or nothing thing. It's, yeah, like anything you're learning. Sometimes people think, oh, meditation, it's so mystical. And it has some amazing dimensions to it. But this is like anything else. You're learning how to, you know, swim. You start out in the kiddie pool, you swim a little bit, you don't go like, I'm going to go swim across the English Channel by myself. You know, I learned the doggy paddle. So we start slowly and just do it a little bit. And then maybe you'll feel like, oh, maybe I could do it a little longer. And have interest and curiosity lead you rather than I should do this. You know, and know that you can always take yourself out. Sometimes you can't take yourself out. It's just like, okay, I'm in it. And then you learn from that. You know, what's it like to be totally in it? You can be mindful and be totally in something. You know, sometimes we think, oh no, I'm mindful only when I'm observing it. That's not true. You can be totally in something and be like, I am totally in something. That's awareness within it. So you don't even have to be afraid of that. What's it like to be totally afraid? That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, being on the hilltop with your supporting generals and looking at fear through binoculars. Although maybe you want to start there. And it feels like that feels like a safe distance. You over there, and I'll check you out. So again, there's no one way, but I think I just encourage you to play with it and to be gentle, you know, and go slow. Fear is if you could really be with fear, that is a huge freedom. I mean, what else is there? Yeah? I mean, that's a huge thing. So not to underestimate it, you know, not to make it into like an overnight project. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that and sharing so honestly. Yeah, that's... Come back.
And you're talking about sitting in it.
With it. Yeah.
Then I'm like, okay, I'll just sit in it and view it because I want to change it and then I want it to be this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be over.
Yeah.
So how do I work with it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to see it.
Something that you're experiencing internally that you don't want to see.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you a question about that? And you don't have to share this if you don't want to, you know? So why don't you want to see it?
I mean, I've avoided it my whole life. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
About me.
Mm-hmm.
It causes pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in others.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to change it.
Yeah. Yeah. Slow and gentle. This is not go sit in it. It's okay. It's there. And you're starting to develop a relationship to it. Yeah? And relationships need to develop slowly sometimes. Yeah, it's not. And so to take your time with that. And some things take time to come to terms with. To come to terms with the pain and sometimes old grief around them. And then we have to feel that. You know, the sort of, yeah, seeing can be really hard. Seeing what's here. So I just say be really gentle with yourself, and I think the kind of deepening of the seeing is inevitable for you. I don't think you need to worry about getting there. I think it's already happening, you know. And of course you want to change it. That's a human thing. And you can't change it that way. And you learn that by trying to change it a few times, you know, and seeing, okay, That doesn't really take care of it. So then, yeah, you're sort of learning how to include it little by little and come to terms with it. And sometimes it's hard to come to terms with things. I'm just being general. And consequences that play out in our life around various things. It can be to take that in, you know, and that's, again, you can, that probably... That's happening already. It's something in our culture which we really is hard for us in our culture is like, you know, we want to get everything to happen. You know, we want it to be done with. You know, and these things we really need to be slow and gentle with. That makes things move faster. You know, to be slow and gentle. Again, it's paradoxical. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
realizing that I'm not my feelings, that I have feelings, and they come, and sometimes they're really intense, but if they don't define me, I'm not my feelings, and none of us are. They're experiences that we have, that we get to be. We have the privilege of being with our feelings, and sometimes they're not, they don't feel very good. But they pass. Feelings don't ever, they pass all the time, and I'm not my feelings.
Yeah, I mean that's something that as we practice, we start to realize about everything. You know, you're not any of the stuff that's arising in your mind and your body, not in an ultimate way. And you're all of it, of course, but not in that kind of that very particular way, which I think you're speaking to. Yeah. One of the things that sometimes meditators can get into is like we hear all the impermanence teachings, and that's true, things are impermanent, but then we can get into the subtle waiting for them to pass, you know, like, oh, this will pass, the Buddha said so, I'm just going to hang out until it passes. And sometimes actually that is a strategy, which it's like it's a subtle strategy. I'm going to wait for it to pass. I'm not saying you're doing this. I'm just saying, like, I just want to name this because it can be out there sometimes. So part of the way of practice is to, how do I, of course it will pass, but how do I be with this? How would I be with this if it never changed? You know, that sometimes I think is the attitude. How could I, if this was never going to change, how would I be with it then? That invites a different kind of presenting to what's there, of kind of meeting. Yeah? It's for me, it kind of echoes that that beginning, the sort of sign that's outside of the first circle of hell in Dante's Inferno, where the sign says, "Give up all hope, you who enter here," and that sounds like a real bummer. But I think of it as the kind of giving up the hope of it changing allows us to enter a certain kind of meeting in relationship with what's there. Yeah. Of course it will change. So anyway, I just wanted to say that for all you people who read any Buddhist literature. Yeah, was there another hand? I can't remember. Yeah, up in the front.
Just to dovetail a little bit, and then I do have a question for you. My practice lately, and with others, has been self-compassion. And I think that that meeting place, it can be held with as much compassion as you would give someone else who's going through what you were going through. And, you know, kind of revolves around the metta practice, but really it's self-compassion that can, for me, my experience, that can transform and help the slowness and what if it never changes.
Kind of allow you to be with it.
But my question for you, which I'm very interested in, is what do you find to be the most challenging being a teacher? So your role as a teacher, what do you find to be most challenging in your experience?
Well, honestly, I think it's like the social relating after like doing stuff. Sometimes, like I actually find teaching quite energizing, and like I really love the dark, and I like interacting with people too. But sometimes I notice in the informal time, I'm a little bit introverted actually. So I sometimes I find that really tiring, sometimes you, I'm not discouraging any of you from talking to me. I'm just being honest up here. Yeah, that can kind of, that's one of the things I find challenging. And yeah, there are many things, but what else is challenging about teaching? I think it was different when I started. I had a lot more challenges, like just speaking in front of people. But now I like it. It's for me, mostly, I really enjoy teaching because I get to talk about my favorite thing, with people who are really interested, mostly. And that's amazing. And so mostly I really enjoy it. Even though I wasn't that interested in teaching when I was first asked to teach, it wasn't like an appealing setup in my mind, but mostly because of just all the people it involves. I like people, but it just seemed like, whoa, really? But no, it's so, being in Dharma, circles with people and talking about the Dharma and sharing the Dharma and sharing with all of you and hearing about what you're doing, it's inspiring and energizing mostly. So, but I haven't been doing it that long, maybe I'll get tired of it. Yeah. We have time for maybe one more. Yeah, before you go, I want to say one thing about what you said before, and just that piece about, you were bringing the self-compassion part, and you were talking about seeing I'm not my feelings, and I like the feel of this, because it's sort of like you're describing how you're finding your own ways with it, and I think that's really useful for us to hear, that there's not like one way. The teachings are skillful means for seeing clearly into the nature of reality, and there's a lot of skillful means in that. And so it's for you to kind of, the main thing is being in relationship to your own experience and learning from that, learning what's skillful and not skillful for yourself, learning what leads to suffering and what leads to happiness in your own experience. That's what the Buddha's invitation was. It's for you to discover for yourself, and teachers are just here to kind of like talk about the stuff, and so that we all have an excuse to come together. But really, the magic of it, the real transformative power of the practice, is in the practicing. And I think just that there are echoes of that in a lot of what you're sharing, is that you guys are doing that. And that's, for me, that's the beautiful thing. That's inspiring. Yeah, was there one over here?
I think when you were introduced, they said you were a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm an intern, so I'm almost licensed. I have to send in my paperwork and I have to take a test. But yeah, I do that work. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I sort of wondered how your Dharma practice and your therapy practice are intertwined in any way.
You're a tough crowd. Oh, that's not a softball question. That's a big question. I don't know if I can do that justice, But I guess in the spirit of, I don't see them as fundamentally separate. Some people think, oh, that's psychological material. Oh, that's Dharma material. I don't see it that way. I'm interested in the human psyche, and human beings and how we work and how we, can function and how we don't function and how we get to be the way we are, how we get conditioned and patterned the way we do and how we can free ourselves from that conditioning. And there are a lot of there's a lot of various traditions that have insight into that. And I think there's a lot of really interesting insight in the kind of Western psychotherapeutic heritage. There's a lot of very interesting stuff and useful stuff I've learned a lot from. But I see this as all part of one thing. I don't see them as different. And I'm, you know, of course, the meditation practice and has influences how I see, you know, and how I am, you know, but those are all skillful means for doing the same thing, I think. Although, I think therapy, you know, Western therapy has a lot to learn from the meditative traditions, you know, I could talk about that for like 2 days. You know, it's best as a symbiotic relationship, you know, working together, I think. Okay, so it's been a pleasure being with you all tonight and talking about this, you know, and being in this together and sharing in the Dharma together. And we are having a retreat this weekend. Maybe some of you are planning on coming, and if you aren't and want to come, you're welcome to. It's just, you know, tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. And basically what we're going to be doing is deepening into the practice together and really kind of in an intensive way, relaxed and yet intensive. It's a different kind of intensity in meditation. That, not like that. That's not that useful. Did I do that just from being tense? See? The bad things come of it. It leads to feedback. So let's just maybe should I do that at the after you talk? Do a little closing ritual, or yeah, okay. So I'm gonna have a little announcement, and then we'll do a kind of a formal closing together for tonight.
Capitol Hill.
The Capitol Hill.
Anyone else? And then for the weekend, for tomorrow, up to Bastyr, would anyone like to carpool?
From First Hill?
First Hill?
I can take you.
Rosie?
Northgate?
Northgate? North Seattle? Thank you.
We had one more.
Wallingford. Like an auction.
Thank you
for offering your teachings and allowing so much time for questions and discussions. Really rich.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. So let's just do a little formal closing together. Just in the part of the tradition, kind of dedicate the merit, which is just a way of sharing what we're doing and sharing with all beings. So may the merits of our practicing here together and our collective energies, collective intentions, and our willingness to look deeply into the nature of things, deeply into our own experience, and to see things as they are. May this serve for the welfare and the benefit of all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. May all beings be happy and free. Thank you all for your presence and your